This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am joined in the studio today by
Christine Wong,
Arvind Yuvraj.
As usual, we'll be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon, keeping up with a little bit of election coverage of a sort. Our first story today is related to the Malaysian elections and its impact on e-commerce. That's a story Arvind will have for us very shortly. Mm-hmm. Then looking at, related again to that, how plentiful jobs, a bonus for China's e-sports craze. Moving on to how some jails in the US are replacing visits with video calls, and of course, inmates and visitors hate it. Story number four, e-fail. Your email app could be exposing your encrypted messages. And then for a bit of fun, to wrap up, the best job ever, perhaps, how you can get paid to teach an Android how to walk a dog. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a serious story. If you want to get in touch with our show today, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Right, let's start off with the e-commerce story. Where did you get this one from?
Yeah, this one comes from iPrice. And I mean, we all knew that over the last week, many of us didn't go online as much. And then I think many of us didn't do a lot of things as much. It was like a long weekend and like a long, long holiday.
Or if they were online, they were checking Twitter. It was live feeds of press conferences.
Yep.
It was very little else.
I think a lot of people like myself, we watch more TV than we ever did in the last 5 years.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time I didn't just log on to Netflix.
Yeah. So iPrice has conducted a survey between the 7th to the 11th of May just to see how much e-commerce dropped in that period. So there is, starting on May 8th, there was a 34.8 decline in online traffic at 10 p.m. That was the day that many Malaysians went offline as they travel in preparation for Elections Day. Then on May 9th, there was a 41.3% decline in online traffic at 10 a.m. So online traffic remained significantly lower than usual as Malaysians went out to vote. 10th of May, 50.6 decline in online traffic. Malaysians are focused on the elections results even at 12 at night. I think we got the official results at what time?
Five.
And then the day after the elections, I mean the second day after the elections, May 11th, Malaysia witnesses the swearing-in ceremony of its 7th Prime Minister, 39.7% decline. So huge drops.
Are we really surprised though? We've been talking about how this election has been done essentially online, via Twitter and social media and one thing or another.
I think the shocking part is that people were still online on their mobile devices and on their whatever they used to be connected on, but they didn't do their online shopping. So they were more engaged in getting results, getting news and reading about what's going on and stuff. I think the numbers are bigger than expected. That's why iPrice sort of published this report, because normally there's a drop of maybe about 20%, 30% and stuff, but 50.6 is like a huge number. It's almost half the people who do online shopping were not doing their online shopping on that day.
I'd be keen to see what the figures were like for the GE13 and see how we could compare them to that.
I think this year with the GE14, there was such an air of hope, so I think people were really trying to pay attention to the election coverage as opposed to focusing their internet connection on anything else.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, those are big numbers, but I'm really not surprised by them at all.
No, I think if you compared to 2013, it might be different because e-commerce has sort of spiked after that.
For sure.
Over the last 5 years. So maybe the numbers would have been higher, but not as many people were doing online shopping back then. They say that, so they broke it down into like a couple of reasons why the day before the elections, of course, because of traffic congestions, online traffic began to decline steadily from 4 p.m. So a lot of people were leaving their work and leaving home and driving back to their hometown. So they're not connected as much. There was also a 34.8 decline in online traffic at 10 p.m. when compared to the same time in the last period. This is significant as online traffic would reach its highest point at about 10 p.m. on normal days. So that was huge. Then overall, the decline on desktop devices, they say, was slightly higher when compared to tablets and mobile devices. So they say that many Malaysians were still shopping online using their mobile devices as they waited for their turn to vote. So even in line, they were doing their shopping and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why they saw a sharp decline with desktop, because you can't, you're obviously not there. But then when you're on your phone and you're waiting, like some people had to wait for as long as 4 hours.
Yeah.
So they stood there and then they still made some purchases and stuff.
Some interesting stats.
I wonder what they bought.
I mean, like, we should,
you buy when you're waiting in line to vote?
We should ask Jeff Sandu. He's normally one of those people. He's probably been buying something as he's been waiting in the queue.
I mean, he gets,
40 parcels a day.
Yeah, like every day. So maybe.
I don't know. Indelible ink remover. it's still there.
So, it's still there for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is interesting. I mean, fess up then, folks. If you were one of these people who were queuing up and you were buying something online during your waiting, while you were waiting to go and vote, let us know. But seriously, I mean, it must have affected you because a big, significant amount of people, 50-something percent
on desktops. The day after, yeah.
Okay.
Overall, on mobile and desktop, but 50.6% on the day after the election.
Have you done, or did you do, any online shopping during the election period? I'd like to hear from you. Tell me what you bought. Let's have a bit of fun with this first. Let's start the ball rolling with that. 018-789-8899 on Twitter at BFM Radio. Move on to story number two. It's all about esports craze over in China.
Yeah, so in case you guys didn't know, one of our current government's manifesto goals was to build a stadium for esports with a complete infrastructure for youth with potential. And it turns out that Malaysia is not the only place where esports is going completely crazy and is becoming something that governments are actually supporting quite a lot. So in China, Chinese university students are being encouraged to attend esports courses and even find a career in esports. That's because there are an estimated 260,000 vacant positions waiting to be filled in the Chinese esports industry, according to a university esports development report published by the Network Film and TV Center of the Chinese Communist Youth League in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, however, that there is no shortage of jobs to play the actual games. Authorities are actually trying to nurture professional game designers, coaches, tournament managers, and esports live broadcasters. The Youth League also announced the establishment of the Chinese University Esports League to help further boost the healthy development of esports, especially at the university level. This is quite interesting just because, you know, I think when esports first became something big, a lot of people were just like, oh, it's just gaming. Like, I don't really understand how you could make money out of this.
That.
Yeah, how you can make a career out of this, why it's important. But, I mean, Alibaba has recommended esports for the Olympics. Like, this is something that people are genuinely taking, taking seriously. And at the moment, I mean, there were about 260 million registered esports gamers in China in 2017, and the number is expected to rise to 350 million in 2019 as well.
Question, how do you register yourself as an esports gamer? I mean,
I think that means, if you have an account on some sort of esports platform. So let's say something like Dota or something.
I see.
I think that would count as the registered esports gamers.
Yeah.
It might also count in terms of if you've signed up in some sort of team or league or something like that. And to see and to count that number. But I'm not exactly sure. But the report was produced with the help of Tencent Esports anyway. So I'm assuming that they've got a lot of decent data on their side. 54.8% of the nation's esports gamers also have undergraduate degrees, making university students the mainstay of the esports market. And in case you thought that esports don't have any market value, the market value of China's esports sector had reached a whopping 20 billion yuan, which is about 3.15 billion US dollars in 2016. Not even right now, 2016, thanks to direct spending on games, copyright distribution, merchandising, and other e-commerce. But the report indicates a looming danger for the sport, which is specifically a shortage of talent.
Which is really interesting because just a couple of years ago, China were releasing statements saying that they wanted people to be gaming less. They wanted people to be spending less time online. So something like this, you know, is really quite encouraging for the esports fraternity, right?
And I think it's important that, you know, the jobs that they're looking for are not necessarily the people who are online themselves. It's all the background stuff, you know. So they're trying to support the people that are going online by trying to find people to fill those other positions, especially people who design the actual games, you know, people who would be live broadcasters to cover, you know, the events of these games as well. And I think that is a really good sign for the esports industry.
Arvin is getting fidgety. He clearly has something to say.
No, okay, I was gonna ask, doesn't Astro have a channel that's just for esports?
I think they did for a while. I don't know if they still do.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Because I know that they launched it with that, it had like an egg mascot, and then it was like 24/7 just broadcasting esports, like people online playing Dota and stuff. I got to know about this, I think, a couple of years ago when they had like a huge tournament. I think it was a Dota 2 tournament. I probably sound like I know nothing about video games now, but I think it was one of those. And then I got to know that the prize money was something like $4 million US.
It's ridiculous. The amount of money floating around for those things is ridiculous.
But so now there's a shortage of people who so there are not enough people playing these games?
No, the people playing the games, there are a lot of people playing the games, but it's the people who are trying to who run the background of the gaming industry. So it's the designers, the coaches, the managers, the broadcasters, and that's who they're trying to, that's you know, the kind of jobs that the Chinese government and a lot of Chinese university students are being pushed to pursue.
I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
Yeah, no. I think it's great.
I think we have a couple of coding academies here as well that focus on video games and especially like developing online games and stuff. I don't know. I don't know how well they're doing, but I know that it had a boom like about 5 years ago because they expected this to happen. So they were pushing a lot of people to study these the whole mechanism of how esports work, what you can do like behind the scenes, not just being like a gamer yourself, but you know, like developing the games and you know making money doing that.
We've just got a tweet in from @ramblingmind just to clarify that it was Astro Channel 808. The egg thing was Twitch and the tournament was called the International.
There you go.
Thanks very much for that.
Immediate feedback, like it. Okay, it's time to take a very short break. We've got music coming up from Jerry Lee Lewis with Lust of the Blood. Of course, we did start off with that story, Malaysian elections and its impact on e-commerce. We are looking at figures of a 34.8% decline in online traffic at 10 p.m. Before Elections Day. What were you guys doing during that period? Let us know. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter @BFM Radio.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Messages during the break. Christine, what do we got?
Yeah, so this is in relation to our first story of the day or the hour or whatnot, which was all about what the e-commerce in Malaysia during the voting period. And this is from Zaidi, who says, "Hi, Richard. Yes, I'm one of the guilty parties. I bought a ticket for Selangor versus JDT for the Saturday's match, and I only wish the line was longer so I could have also bought the New England jersey."
Confession time. Well done.
Very nice. Thanks, Eddie.
Keep the messages coming in. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. A story that I picked up yesterday is from Ars Technica, how some jails in the US, they're replacing visits with video calls. So this is something very, very interesting. This woman, her name is Rebecca Parr, and she went to visit her nephew recently in a prison in Tennessee. It was in Knox County Jail. She didn't get the opportunity to see him face-to-face or even through the glass that we often see in these cop shows, you know, where they pick up a phone from one side or the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead, she was ushered into a different room where there was a whole bunch of other people for what they are now calling a video visitation. So she picked up a telephone handset whilst watching a grainy video feed of her nephew's face. So there's quite a few prisons across the US that are taking this route where they are removing in-person visitations entirely. And they're saying that one of the reasons behind it is, of course, because it requires more staff supervision. The biggest amount of contraband, obviously, is passed from person-to-person visits. What they are now doing, though, is that you can do these video calls, but what you have to do is you have to drive all the way to the prison. They then take you in another room where you do this video conferencing. So let's say, for example, you in the US, you live in New York. Your cousin is in prison in Iowa. Normally, you would go all of that distance. You would be able to visit the inmate, and it would be face-to-face.
Yeah.
Now, you still have to travel that distance, but then you only get a video call, like an in-conference kind of call.
Mm.
They are offering remote calls as well, but these start at a price of 75 cents per minute and go all the way up, in some cases, up to R3.95 per minute for a video conferencing call. Now, I understand, you know, and I'm not one of these people who say prisoners should have human rights like everybody else, right?
Yeah.
And they should be allowed to visit. And it's more about the family, I think, rather than it is actually most of the time the inmate, right? And it's for their benefit as well.
Yeah.
Something like this just speaks volumes about money and how these prisons are saying, you know, we don't have enough money. We're having more inmates coming in. A lot of these people, we can't do this, one thing or another. And this is another way of just saving a little bit of cash, right?
Yeah.
And they're looking at these video visitation products. They're asking jails to sign contracts that require them to phase out entirely these in-person visits. And that triggers such an outcry that some companies have removed these provisions from more recent contracts. The Knox County Jail introduced its visitation services in March of 2014 and then eliminated face-to-face visits the very next month that they put them in. So studies have confirmed that incarcerated individuals have better outcomes when they receive in-person visits from family members and supportive community members. This is from a report from the Department of National, the Department of Justice National Institute of Corrections. You know, so they're even saying, you know, the prisons themselves are saying the more people come to visit, the more chances that these criminals will not go out and reoffend. You know, it's this seems to be the way that they're moving to rehabilitate, you know, removing social interactions from prisoners entirely. Right. What do you think about this, Chris?
I'm really upset about this, you know, because I think that a lot of prisons, especially in the U.S., there's a big problem with the institution of prisons where they're not actually focused on rehabilitation. They're just focusing on kind of shoving everyone into one block, really.
It's punitive rather than... Yeah.
And this really concerns me because, like you said, it's also a lot less about the prisoners but about their families who haven't seen them for maybe like months, maybe years.
Yeah.
And you get one shot to, you know, talk to these people that you've been apart from for so long.
15 minutes. It's every 2 months for some people.
Yeah, and all you get is a video feed. I mean, the thing is, right? I kind of understand.
Not even a good video feed at that.
Yeah, you know, I kind of understand the whole, removing the in-person meetups in terms of like when you can see each other and like touch each other and things like that because you could pass things to them. And that I kind of understand.
Yeah.
But even the phone booths with the windows and stuff, isn't that enough? Mm. You know, isn't that enough security? Like, isn't that enough to prevent all that stuff from happening? Can't you just let them have a conversation person to person? Because especially for, let's say, if an inmate has been in solitary for a while as well, they could go completely insane.
Bonkers. Yeah,
yeah, you know, from the lack of social interaction. So it's really not putting the right focus on, you know, I'm sure there are other ways to cut costs. And I'm sure there are other ways to improve the whole system.
It worries me that the video conferencing companies are the ones that are saying to the prisons, you know, if you sign up for this service, you have to eradicate these person-to-person visits. I think that's horrendous.
It's not their place to say.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, or we have to find out, which video conference call companies these are and how they're tied and why they have so much leverage on the prisons themselves. But to be, I don't know, just to look at it from a different perspective, from the prison's point of view, because of the size of the U.S. population, they have a huge issue with prisons, and they are not funded enough. So they don't have enough funding. They have problem with staff, and like you said, they're not bothered about, you know, getting people back on the right track. They're just, you know, locking people up and stuff. I think it has to work on merit. You know, you have to know how to segment your prisoners, like what they're in for. If someone's in there for maybe murder, then of course you have to look at his rights and want to do, but if someone's there for something that's light, and then there are a lot of people who are in there for no reason at all, they say,
most of them are in there. To be fair, the vast majority of black male prisoners are there for a mediocre crime of a small amount of drug possession, something very, very tiny. That's all it is.
Yeah. So if it's something like that, then if you have a track record of him not doing anything, or he has good behavior, he or she has good behavior for maybe a few months, then they should be given, I don't know if this works, but then they should be given more rights, I guess, or visitation rights, or, you know, not have to, you know, talk to their family members on a screen or something.
It's companies like, not only do they install this service, but then when they are charging, you know, whether it's $1.98 per minute or whether it's $3.95 per minute, most of the video calling services will then take a commission off the top. You know, so some of these companies are making $20,000, $30,000 per year just by having these things installed in the prisons.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like something, this doesn't sound like it's going to help them with their funding. It sounds like someone has leverage on the prison system.
Yeah.
Some company has found a way to get a tender with the prison system, and then they're using it to make money. And maybe the prisons are getting a cut, I guess. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Too.
They're getting a cut, and just to help them fund their own prison ecosystem and stuff. Maybe.
But I mean, I also don't understand how this cuts on like hiring costs, for example, because even if it's a video, it still works in the same way as those glass booths. You should still be watching, you know, what people are saying and kind of like monitoring the whole situation regardless, right?
So they do have the funny thing is they have some features within this software that if you are the person calling in, you have to use this very specific software, and it has like a dotted line where you have to keep your face within that particular area,
right?
So that you know, you don't end up showing other body parts, for example. If you tried to move out of that thing, it would the video feed would fade. So, you know, the idea of like
So it has like a focus, like a frame that you have to be in. Okay, I don't know. It sounds, it sounds
barbaric.
It sounds lopsided.
Yeah.
Even the stuff about, even if you look at merit, it shouldn't work that way. There should be like a different system. You shouldn't have to reward people in prisons, even though they are in prisons. You shouldn't have to segregate them and reward them according to stuff they do. And I don't know, it doesn't fit in today's world, I guess.
Right. Yeah. It fits into America, right?
Yeah, just in general, prison shouldn't be profitable. That's
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Okay, time to take a short break. Let's have some music from Steve Miller. Steve Miller Band, it is Dance, Dance, Dance. Keep those messages coming in, 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter, at BFM Radio. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Business for Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with...
Arvind Yuvraj.
And Christine Wong.
Okay, so we've had a few months of talking about how dangerous Facebook has been, selling data to one thing or another. We've had Twitter bots. We've had all kinds of stuff. Now, just when we thought things might have been settling down, e-fail.
So security researchers in the US said that they have discovered a critical flaw in the way that certain email programs handle a popular encryption technology that safeguards emails from prying eyes. Now, the flaw is known as eFail, and it affects applications such as Mozilla Thunderbird, Apple Mail, and some versions of Outlook, specifically 2007, 2010, 2013, and 2016. Now, eFail targets the encryption standards known as PGP, standing for Pretty Good Privacy, and S/MIME, which is Secure or Multipurpose Internet Mail Extensions. A full list of affected email programs is available from the researchers' report, which you can find on the Washington Post. Now, a lot of people could all be compromised by the bug, pretty much anyone that uses any sort of encrypted email, but specifically whistleblowers, political activists, people who really depend on the encryption of the emails could be really compromised by this. And this was supported by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is a separate technology advocacy group that previewed the researchers' findings. And they've basically said that users of all these affected email programs should disable any third-party software they've installed that allows the email apps to use PGP or S/MIME, I suppose. The flaw works when an attacker already has access to a victim's encrypted email. So the vulnerability allows hackers to read an encrypted email by making changes to its HTML, which essentially tricks the affected email applications into decrypting the rest of the message. So the attacker can modify the encrypted email, and when the person for whom it's intended opens it or previews it, the mail program sends the contents out to a remote server that the attacker has set up.
Okay, so just to be clear, people who are not sending encrypted emails or using PGP or S/MIME are perfectly fine.
Yeah, y'all are good.
It's only the people who are using those plugins to send encrypted mail. Okay.
Yes. So, if you've got stuff that you're hiding in your email, it's time to panic. But point being is that all you need to do is open the email and pretty much your information could be sent out, but you have no really real way of knowing. Apple has said that it's aware of the issue and that updates to fully address it will soon be released. Microsoft has not immediately responded to a request or comment. Mozilla has referred questions to the Thunderbird Council, and they say that a patch is being developed and will be distributed as an update by the end of the week. Now, there are some security experts that are saying basically that because eFail seems to only affect specific email applications, like I said, there's a whole list if you want to go look at it yourself, it's kind of overkill to say that there's a flaw in the encryption process because a lot of people have been panicking and saying like PGP and S/MIME are not enough, that they don't actually keep anything encrypted. But what it is that a lot of people are saying that the warnings are kind of overblown, that, the attack could be mitigated by avoiding HTML emails or using authenticated encryption, like you said, Rich, that adds a layer of protection to confirm the message hasn't been changed. It's also, NDN, who is the chief executive of the encrypted email service ProtonMail, which has not been affected by the flaw as well, basically said that the problem isn't with the encryption protocols. It's just with the way that email clients have implemented it. It's like any software, if the vendors are actively patching and updating, it's secure, so it's fine.
And that's the thing with PGP, though. It's been around for years.
Yeah.
One of the best things to do at Johns Hopkins says Signal, use Signal and other encrypted chat applications. They aren't vulnerable the way that PGP is. They're not only more secure, they're more widely used. So the best advice, to be honest, is to stop using GPG or PGP for most purposes. Start using Signal. Safer, easier, free. Works on your phone, at least as well as on your computer.
Yeah, pretty much. But just in case, for people who might be using some encryption stuff, using PGP or anything like that, just, you know, just watch out.
And make sure you're up to date. I think that's what even Microsoft says it. Make sure you're up to date.
Microsoft don't give you a choice. Switch on your laptop and already you've got to wait 5 hours for it to update.
I know it's annoying, but there's
It's
super annoying, but there's a reason for that. Because people in like Windows XP and stuff just refuse to update their Windows, and then they would get hacked one day.
But do you know what I would prefer? If you opened up your laptop and it said, you know, I think I'm going to update now. It might take me at least an hour. Can I do it now, or should you, or would you like to wait until a little bit later on in the day?
Oh, everyone's going to hit wait.
Yeah, of course.
That's what happens with me, maybe.
Everyone's going to hit wait. I'll do it some other time. And then that some other time will be like 5 years from now.
The remind me tomorrow button is the best button.
Yeah.
But most of the time, let's be honest about this. You leave the office at 5, 6, 7 or whatever it is. Your laptop gets closed. And the first time you open it in the morning is when you're back in the office and you want to start work. And that's when it decides to update.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a pain in the royal bottom. Okay. Time for some music. A bit of Morrissey with Tomorrow when we get back our final story of the day. A bit of fun. Best job ever. How you can earn some money for teaching an android to walk a dog. Yes. Here on BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Final story of the day. Right. So a curious gig popped up on Airtasker this morning. Airtasker is one of those gig economy websites over in Australia. And this one is for, dog lovers out there. Here is the gist of it. So it's, are you always the first to buy the latest gadgets and the newest tech to make your busy life easier? Do you know who Isaac Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke are? Are you interested in artificial intelligence and the future that androids have in our society? If this sounds like you, then this opportunity to be part of a social experiment involving a cyber life android might just suit your circuitry. So it's an actual job listing on Airtasker, and it's to be a tester for a CyberLife Android. A CyberLife Android, of course, is, if you know anything about video games, is from Detroit Become Human, a video game that's coming out very soon. And this is obviously all the brainchild of PlayStation. So there's a here's the full details. It says, I'm Nick, and I work at PlayStation Australia. To celebrate the launch of Detroit Become Human on PS4, we're on the hunt for one lucky Aussie to help test the latest in CyberLife Android technology whilst it performs basic tasks such as taking a dog for a walk. We want to make sure that androids are ready for society and that society is ready for them. Your role on the day will include teaching your android to perform basic tasks correctly, minding our android whilst they integrate with society, troubleshooting android responses to simple instructions, recording the reactions of members of the public on meeting our android. So, if you're a forward-thinking and tech-savvy Australian resident that is interested in participating in an amazing social experiment, then we'd love for you to let us know why you'd be the right person for the task.
I thought this was specifically... to focus on the dog. I completely missed the memo about the android, to be honest with you guys. But you know, I think it's an interesting kind of foreshadowing of what might come in the future. I think that it's going to get real bicentennial man up in here, basically.
Right.
And that we're going to start using robots for a lot of our menial tasks, like walking a dog.
So the thing is, it's an actual job advertisement, and it's worth noting for people that are over in Australia, since it will be filmed, you've got to be over the age of 18 and be willing to have your experiences shared on social media platforms, obviously. You'll also have to have a dog, because obviously that will be very handy. It's Sydney-based job. It will be happening on May the 21st. And so far, as of the time of this advert being written, which was 8 p.m. last night, only 18 people have applied for the position. Can you believe that? I mean, it's only $500 Australian, but
you get to hang out with Android
and walk a dog.
Walk a dog. The dog. Right. Specifically.
Right.
So you get paid $500 to teach the android how to walk a dog.
Correct.
I would pay the android $500 if it could teach me how to walk my dog. And then that would be like a goal. Because anyone who's ever owned like a dog, like if without training, would know that you don't know how to walk your dog.
Right.
The dog walks you.
Correct.
You just take it out on a leash so that it doesn't
run away.
It doesn't run away or lose its way back home. I would fail at this job.
I think it's going to be great though. I'm interested to see how this kind kind of pans out over the next couple of weeks.
I hope there's some sort of live stream or something that we can see of this lucky person that is chosen to hang out with this Android, because I think I would tune into that for sure.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. But of course, let's quickly run through the stories we covered today. And if you did miss any part of the show, don't forget you can listen back to the podcast via the app, which is available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. We started off with...
We spoke about the Malaysian elections and its impact on e-commerce.
And then we talked about how Chinese university students are being encouraged to attend esports courses and even find a career in esports as well.
Then we talked about how some jails in the US are replacing visits with video calls.
And then we talked about how there is a new critical flaw in the way that certain email programs handle encryption, which is called e-fail.
Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the best job ever, get paid $500 to teach an Android how to walk a dog.
Nice.
Right, don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. With the state of the Attorney General's office currently undecided post GE14, the Breakfast Grill spoke to prominent lawyer and former Bursay chair Ambiga Srinivasan to discuss the path forward for Malaysia's judicial system. That's probably one you might not want to miss.
It was super interesting.
Very interesting. Have a listen to that. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, we've got some music from Primal Scream with Velocity Girl, followed by The Stripes with What a Shame. You've been listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury on behalf of Christine Wong and Arvin Yuvaraj. We'll be back tomorrow afternoon at noon. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.